Hello, and welcome to Criterion Shortcuts. My name is Aaron West, and I am covering Jean-Luc Godard's 1967 Weekend in our second episode. One of the toughest parts of doing a cast like this is how do you describe a Godard film? What adjectives do you use? It seems lazy to use the word strange or warped to describe a Godard film because, yeah, they're strange and warped. That was his aesthetic. They're also a little scattershot often. They're allegorical. They are also creative. They're inventive. They're innovative. They are a lot of things. And you could say these things about Weekend. You could say these things about really his entire filmography, whether it was the 60s or whether it is his work up until now. I'm going to take the easy way out and describe Weekend in a lot of those ways. It's really all of those things. It is strange, it is warped, it's not realistic. It is a Jean-Luc Godard film from 1967, and the more he became comfortable in his career, the more he experimented, and he began his career with experimentation. So this is actually from 1967. It's one of three movies he came out with that year. The others were Two or Three Things I Know About Her and La Chinoise. So he was quite prolific, but this would represent near the end of his early career, his 60s career. He would take some time off and he would become proactive in politics. So how do you describe the synopsis of a movie like Weekend? Plot is less important than content, than the message that he's trying to convey. So the plot is extremely simple. It is a couple that are traveling across France to Oinville, and all they care about is collecting an inheritance. And really, it's a road movie in a way. It's about the journey to get there, and it's quite a journey, as those have seen will find. And even if you haven't seen it, just listening, you'll find I really can't describe the journey they go through. It's something that has to be seen to really be understood. There was not much of a script. I don't think Godard was a big fan of detailed shooting scripts. I think a lot of it, you can tell, he did kind of make as he was going along, and I think he kind of enjoyed that. You know, he probably had what he wanted to say in mind, and he directed the film in that manner. So let me dig in a little bit. I did say recently that on these solo casts of mine, that I would not do foreign movies, and that was because with Alan Bristow, the first episode, I was able to engage with the clips and use those as another voice. Not so much for Weekend because it's in French, and I doubt many listeners here speak French. So, but there are a few sound effects that I can use that are universal. And since this is a main theme is cars and traffic and car wreckage and road rage, even honking is a major element of Godard's work. So here comes some honking. And this is part of a 9-minute tracking shot. This shot is actually extremely impressive. It's a lengthy shot, tracks along the side of the road. We see our protagonist try to get through traffic, which is basically at a standstill. We don't know why until near the end, but the only the right lane is obstructed. The left lane is not, so they pass cars and the camera moves with them, sometimes a little ahead, sometimes a little behind. And we see all sorts of characters and vehicles as we go. It's really quite a journey, literally and figuratively. So we see, like I mentioned, lots of people. We see people throwing a beach ball through the sunroofs of their car. We see hordes of children, school children, wandering about. We see animals. There's a horse, a buggy. There's a vehicle with zoo animals. It looks like tigers or lions. There's also different kinds of vehicles. There's your basic cars, like the ones our protagonists are driving. There's also there's a Shell oil truck, which I think he meant to say something by using that that symbol. There's a boat that's being carried. At the end of the shot, it is just carnage. We see that basically dead people on the side of the road, and that's really what was holding things up. Along with all the other wrecked cars that they would see along the way. And once they get past the wreckage, they are on their way, glad to be away from that inconvenience. They show no empathy, really no emotion whatsoever towards what they witnessed. Whereas I don't know about you, but if I were in a car and I saw a horrific accident with bodies on the side of the road, it would probably leave an impression. I think that's the case with most people. So this is, in a way, Godard's vision of a post-apocalyptic society. Only it's not, again, not steeped in realism. It's more symbolic. He's using these junk cars as a way of just showing that society is broken down. People are still living. We encounter many people along the way, sometimes with functioning cars. But the majority of the trip, they are encountering and these obstacles which are in the road. Sometimes we see fiery crashes that they have to get through, get around. Sometimes, actually, at one point, they crash themselves, and their own car blows up. So I guess they dodged a bullet there by being able to live. So yes, it is, I guess you could say, post-apocalyptic, and it even goes even further towards the third act, into the wilderness, which I'm probably not going to touch on too much, just because the third act is really warped, and you really can't spoil this film, but it's better just to experience it. So the main characters are Corinne and Roland Duran. They're played by Mireille Darc and Jean Yann, and they are terrible. They're just despicable people. There's an early scene in darkness, and this is another way that Godard likes to shoot in an unconventional way. He shrouds them in darkness and has the female retelling a graphic sexual experience about a threesome. She begins speaking of it as if it's nothing out of the ordinary. It's just a romantic threesome. But as she continues, it gets more absurd, it actually gets graphic, and it actually gets comically graphic. In many ways, this movie is a comedy, and sometimes you can't help but chuckle at some of the absurdity. This is actually an extended scene as well, several minutes, where she's just telling her husband about this experience, and he's just listening and asking questions every now and then. It reminded me of Sallow, which of course would come out almost a decade later, and there's a prostitute in Sallow who would tell lurid tales, really trying to get people excited. Of course, this in Sallow, the character was a prostitute. Here, the character is a housewife. She is, and she's a bourgeoisie, which I will get into here momentarily. And this tale will actually come back in the crazy third act. All the movie is crazy, but the third act is especially so. And that's in, as you can imagine, graphic and somewhat comical, somewhat disgusting manner. So yes, so these people, the Rolands, are terrible people. Everything they do is dedicated to finding and obtaining this inheritance in Oinville. As I've mentioned, there are cars littered across the road throughout their journey. There are bodies, there's carnage. They could care less. They are only interested in getting where they're going. There's even one scene where, there's bodies littered on the road, and Mr. Roland keeps asking them, "Where is Oinville? Where is Oinville?" Well, of course, they're not going to respond. They're deceased on the side of the road. And when he realizes that, he says, quote, "All these jerks are dead," and of course they are. But he is actually mad at them for their unfortunate accidents, not because what happened or any tragedy, but because they can't tell him how to get to Oinville. So they only should exist to serve him, basically. They also encounter other characters along the way. They meet historical figures, Robespierre, the controversial figure from the Reign of Terror. There's Emily Bronte, Tom Thumb, who's a fictional character. There's even a person that's related to Dumas, or a descendant of Alexander Dumas, who wrote the Three Musketeers. So when they encounter these strange people, they're less than friendly. They're bored, they're angered often. It's usually one of the two, or apathetic. And they are just enduring whatever they have to do in order to get to Oinville. Godard used a lot of cinematic techniques in this film. As always, he likes to play around. One of the ways he did this in Weekend is with the use of title sequences. It's almost like a silent film in terms of how often they were used, the volume of title cards. So the title cards, a lot of times they are him commenting on the film as it goes along, sometimes with humor. The first title card we see is, quote, "A film found in a dump," and this actually precedes the Weekend, the main title card that gives us the name of the movie. And he uses these in various ways. Sometimes they divide the narration, separate the piece into acts. I think the most notable of that is when he divides into the third act, which is World 3, which we are led to believe is them actually going into another world or really leaving reality behind. A lot of them are whimsical. You can tell that Godard is having a lot of fun. He likes to use non-diegetic elements, that is, things that do not appear in the scene, and this is one of them. Sometimes he actually does quick cuts, cutting from the title card to the action, back to the title card, back to the action, and sometimes it's the same, repeating the same scene. Almost like a DJ would scratch a record and repeat the same phrase of music over and over again. So yeah, he definitely has a lot of fun with this one. He's definitely playing around while making a point. So one of the points he is making is on economics and politics. But Godard is not the kind of guy to just make a film he's not a preachy guy, I should say. He doesn't just sit you down and say, Charles de Gaulle, who was in power at the time, his policies are terrible and are ruining the country. He's not that direct. He's more coy and cynical, and he, again, playful. I think Godard is always playful. He plays with his political opponents as much as he assaults them. And he uses these little vignettes that the Durands encounter along the way as a way of making his points known. Of course, one of the ways this is an anti-De Gaulle film is because the protagonists themselves, the Durands, are bourgeoisie, and they are terrible, terrible people, as I've already said. And their negative portrayal really strengthens his argument, which is very leftist. That's where Godard, he was a radical leftist, you could say almost a socialist at the time. And he's saying that these are the kinds of people that are benefiting from De Gaulle's policies, which were very conservative, and of course we had a counter-student movement, which was very radical and leftist and Marxist, which, of course, if you know your French history, or even film history, because it's important for both, this would culminate in some riots in 1968, and Godard was instrumental in shutting down Cannes that year, the Cannes Film Festival. So, yes, an example of this is the aforementioned scene where he says these jerks are all dead. That's not a very sensitive, considerate thing for a lead character to say. But there are many, many other examples. I just noted a few. One is when they are in their own crash and dealing with their own wreckage. Rather than screaming for her life, Corinne, who we believe initially is screaming for her life, is actually screaming for her Hermes handbag. So she cares more about her handbag than her survival. There are many, many other scenes. One in particular that struck a chord is when they encounter that divine Dumas ancestor who actually offers them free wishes if they'll take him to London. So they start naming off what they wish for, and you can guess it's basically ridiculous things, material items, and differing. She wants fashion. She asked for a weekend with James Bond, and he agrees with her. Yeah, a weekend with James Bond would be great. He's, of course, a fictional character, but in this, there are other fictional characters here. So in this world of Godard, it might actually be possible. So the scene actually ends with this godlike figure maligning them and stating that they're despicable. Why would he grant those wishes? The film is also very much a product of its time and history. There are a lot of references that I think a lot of people would miss. There are some that are easy. There's one scene where they're hitchhiking and they're trying to get a ride from people, and people will stop the car and ask them a question about current events. or politics. One of the questions was, do they side with Mao or Johnson? Mao being the communist chairman Mao, and Lyndon Johnson being the president of the United States at the time. And when they say Johnson, the car drives away. Again, that's a nod to Godard's politics. He would want people to choose Mao in that situation. They ask, who struck first, Egypt or Israel? And when they say Egypt, which actually is true, the drivers drive away. People might not pick up on that. That's a little more obscure, but that is based on the Six-Day War that had happened not too long, actually in recent history of when this film came out. So yeah, for 1967, it's a zeitgeist film. There are a lot of references, a lot that are probably lost on the modern viewer, a lot that are probably lost on me. I don't know everything about history in the 60s or otherwise. I know a little bit, enough to pick up on those couple things and a little more. But it's a very modern film for 1967, speaking to the situation that they were dealing with. And it's actually interesting to look at it many, many decades later with the benefit of hindsight and context and to evaluate it as a piece of art. Another thing Godard likes to do, and he's done this before, is he likes to break the fourth wall. That is, he likes to show that his characters realize that they are in a film. And they do this numerous times. In fact, there's a lot of nods to the film industry and to just the state of cinema. One is after they meet Emily Bronte and Tom Thumb, and Bronte recites poetry, and Tom Thumb recites philosophy. Meanwhile, again, they are trying to just get directions. And frustrated, they say, "What a rotten film. All we meet are crazy people." Yeah, you could say that they're also crazy. In fact, maybe Bronte and Tom Thumb are the rational ones. But another example is from the same hitchhiking scene I mentioned just a moment ago. Someone actually asks if they're in a film, and they say, no, they're not in a film. And that person calls them a liar and drives off. So it was interesting in that scene to see what made people drive away and refuse to help them. There's actually one scene where they're just talking about their predicament, and an offhand comment made from Monsieur Durand says that the problem is cinema. What? The problem is cinema. What does that have to do with their situation? Maybe, who knows? Who knows what's inside Godard's brain? But he is referencing cinema in general and their own position in a film. There's also, in the third act, one of the few things I'll say about the third act, they do reference specific films, and I know this is just Godard having fun. Godard, as many people know, is a huge film fan, and there's one time where he has some terrorists radioing in like a military radio, and rather than code names, they say, "Battleship Potemkin calling the searchers, are you there?" And the searchers answers, and that's basically the extent of the conversation. Later they have the same characters doing the radioing, and they say, "Johnny Guitar calling Gasta Berling," which is another film and piece of literature. So there are a lot of references to film littered throughout, and Godard is definitely making a statement on film. The biggest one is when the film ends, and you might consider this a spoiler. I personally don't think you can spoil this film. I think it's so out there that that telling you what happens at the end really won't, there's no element of surprise here. But at the end, he shows Finn, which means, of course, the end, and then he says, "The cinema." He adds that to the end title card. He adds more words later, but that translates as the end of cinema. So what is Godard saying? Is he again just playing with the audience? Is he having fun? Is he saying this is the end of his own cinema, which actually might be somewhat accurate because his career did wind down and this is one of his last, actually this may be, people would say, his last major film. That's just as likely. In fact, I'd say it's just as likely that he's playing around and making a provocative statement as he is condemning the state of modern cinema. And 1967 actually is a great year for international and American and even French cinema. So it's possible he's just being clever, and that's just a neat way to play with the word Finn. Who knows? So I do, of course, rate these films, and Godard is really a tough one to peg down. Out of curiosity, before I recorded, I looked up some people I respect, and I wanted to see what their opinions are. And probably not surprisingly, they're all over the place. Some people adore this film, love it. Some people hate it. So, and that actually is fact. And I've had those experiences with Godard. Some films I love, some films I hate, and a lot of times the films I hate are the ones that other people love. It really is something in what Godard films connect with some people that don't and others. It's actually something that we might want to explore someday. But this one's somewhat connected to me. Of course, the de Gaulle commentary doesn't really mean much to me today. I guess you could look at it through a modern lens and just modern conservatism versus leftism or liberalism. But I look at this more as just a work of art, and as I've said before, I try to leave the politics at the door. Technically, it's amazing. Not just that 9-minute tracking shot, but really every scene, all the cars, all the carnage, the mise-en-scene, which of course the mise-en-scene is a lot of cars being thrown all over the place. So, and it is funny at times. It's not laugh out loud hysterical, but it's more satirical. It's like, oh, I see what you're doing there, kind of laughter. So I would give it a 7.5. Not my favorite Godard, not my least favorite Godard, but that puts it probably in the upper tier. There are a few Godard films that I really love. Of course, since I'm talking about the Criterion, I will mention the supplements. And there are a number. I think my favorite was the Kent Jones visual essay, which is about 25 minutes, and I really love all visual essays that come out on Criterion. What I really liked about the Kent Jones essay is that he gave a lot of historical context that I might not have picked up on otherwise. One thing I like about the Kent Jones essay is that he puts it into context with the time. He does go into more depth about the anti-de Gaulle nature. He talks about Godard's politics, about how he was basically a radical leftist at the time. And in fact, the next year, he would actually be active as a leftist. One of the more interesting things was, and maybe the most salacious, was his relationship with people. And Godard does have a reputation for not getting along with a lot of people. And that was definitely the case here. He didn't get along with his leads, in particular, Mireille Darc. That recurs throughout the supplements. A lot of people back this up. He did hate her, and he actually tried to humiliate her on many occasions. He also hated his producers, and it wasn't actually Kent Jones, but it was Raoul Cotard who said that one of the reasons he did these things was he wanted to annoy his producer, and that's why he put together the film that he did. Cotard also says that he used fast film stock that allowed for quick shooting. Of course, this is a lot of outdoor shooting on location, daytime shooting. We find out that he liked to shoot from 9 till noon, and that was it. That was the end of the day. He was also in a very bad mood the entire film. I think he threw some tantrums, especially at the lead actress, and she just had to endure them and endure him. What's interesting is the two leads, Darc and Yann, they are interviewed in 1968, but it's a very short interview. And you would never guess that there was any animosity there. They praise Godard, and Darc actually, quote, Darc says, quote, "I was worried that we wouldn't get along, but now that it is finished, I am very pleased." And she goes on to say that she would work with him again. Of course, she would not, and neither would he, and I'm sure he was glad not to. There's also a piece with Claude Miller, who was the AD, and he's a huge film buff, and in fact, he gushes about a lot of the films he loved around the time. His favorite was Lola by Demme. He says that Godard hated Ralph Baum, the production manager, and actually banned him from the set. So, yeah, Godard hated some people, loved others, but he definitely had an explosive personality. He liked to provoke people, and we see that in his films. I think he likes to provoke his audience. He liked to prank people. So that happened both behind the camera and in the scene. He was a provocateur. So yeah, I rated the film a 7.5. I did enjoy the supplements. I thought they all gave a lot of context and enhanced the film for me. A movie like this, though, I know I say this a lot, but I would have loved a commentary. And I wish there had been one. Part of that is I think Godard is a complex filmmaker, and a lot of these scenes could have used some explanation. Also, a lot of the references, as I mentioned, a lot of them were lost on me, and I'm sure lost on a lot of other people. It would have been neat if some film expert could have pointed some of those out. So I'm going to give The Criterion an 8, which I think is a fair grade. It's definitely worth watching, especially if you're a Godard fan. The movie is important, I'd say. Of course, we have our Criterion canon, and I would not put this in the Criterion canon. It's not one of the best films of all time, in my opinion. But I still say it's important and still worth looking at. So that is it for episode 2 on Jean-Luc Godard's Weekend. You can reach us on Twitter at CriterionCU or on Facebook at facebook.com/CriterionCloseUp. We'd like to hear what you think about these episodes. I will tell you that the next Shortcut episode will not be me solo. I'm going to have a guest coming up. And then we have The Brood with Brian Sauer this coming out this weekend, and we're going to talk about David Cronenberg's early career. Thank you for listening. Je veux te saluer et te faire mes adieux. Mais l'océan, ce n'est pas la force de poursuivre, car je sens que le moment est venu de revenir parmi les hommes à la terre.